just as a small segment, I just wanted to first of all see how you guys approach doing a small section of chords. You're kind of starting to hear all the different ways of arpeggiating between those chords, and also common tones that can resolve. So, and you know, you can even take something from a. Let's all take a solo over that same progression with this idea in mind. Something I like to do with transcriptions too is just take, oh, that's a little cool fragment. Let me just try to put that over as many chord changes as I can. So, and then what that forces your ears to do is kind of figure out how the little common tone things change. Go to the next one. So let's. Kind of in a vamp that's slow like that, you're actually hearing those things. You're not having to think about it anymore as kind of a mathematical exercise. And an even better way to kind of test yourself and see if you're doing that for any chord progression is try singing a solo over it. You're not going to be able to, if you can't find it with your voice, it's not quite in your ears yet. I'm not going to put anybody on the spot and say, sing a solo over this phrase. So.
I know you're saying this. You're like, you have to find it out every time because you can't hear it ahead of time.
Right. You're hearing ahead, just how you would hear, you know, if you were just improvising on a major chord, you can hear what notes that setting and say, oh, okay, I could go up to the third here and you know, maybe go up to a fifth. I'm not thinking about it that way. I'm just hearing, oh, okay, I could go from C to E to G, and that would sound, you know, that would sound nice. The C major chord. It's the same kind of thing, but you're just anticipating what, from doing all of those as exercises for a while and getting information from solos that you hear too. That's where kind of singing along with solos comes into, is, you know, even something like Miles' solo on Freddie Freeloader is a great place to start. Oh, what is it? So you're hearing how he's kind of navigating through those chord tones. That then gets in your inner ear. Your brain does whatever your brain does. Who knows? And then when you go to play, some of those little connections tend to come out. So you could even take, you know, that first phrase, for example. You can make a whole thing. How little can I twist that to make it work? Talk about someone who could play melodies. Johnny Hodges was an amazing alto player. He was in the Duke Ellington band. He did that recording of Isfahan that became really famous. Yeah, any of those guys, or even, you know, even other guys, even later era players, like, you know, Wayne Kelly, I'm trying to think of other good examples. Charlie Parker gets dense. I wouldn't start there. Though that stuff is all incredibly singable, too, when you slow it down and kind of figure out what's going on. For guitarist Wes Montgomery.
Yeah.
That's great.
Is a good way to learn the solo is to be able to sing along with it, like, first?
It's the most, based on what I've heard, it's the most direct way. Because at that point, you're memorizing what it sounds like and not just what the notes are.
Yeah.
It's really different. And, I mean, right now, if you feel like writing it out for yourself later, absolutely, and especially if you want to go back to it at some point for future reference. But having a vocabulary of solos that you can sing is probably the most direct way, even aside from, you know, any of the theoretical concepts you're working on, it's the most direct way to get vocabulary.
Is that how you learn a lot of solos?
Yeah.
So you learn to sing them at the piano and kind of have an idea of what they're going
to... Yeah, well, I mean,
like
it takes
anyway.
A little practice to kind of figure out if it's in your head and you're singing with it, and only you know if... It's not like you have to become an amazing vocalist or anything, but just as long as you're getting the pitch and the rhythm together, and you know, that also allows for you to pick up all the stylistic inflections, things like time feel. There are a lot of unspoken conventions that are in those solos. Bassy bands, that's another great place to start for this stuff. Even sing along with sax solis, but you'll start to hear how those lines fit with the chord changes. And then if you... doesn't even have to be a large segment. If you find a part you like, just like what I was just trying to do with that Miles solo, take it apart, figure out what's going on. Is it an approach tone to, is it approaching a chord tone of some kind? Usually it is. Almost every time it is, actually, if it's not directly arpeggiating. And just try to fit that over the chord progression to a tune. By the time you're able to do that and kind of sing that, then you're hearing the chords. You're not thinking about the chords. Does that kind of answer your question a little bit more?
Yeah, because even when we were doing the 2-5-1, I'm like, oh, what's the third, second chord again? Oh,
yeah.
Yeah,
I did
like,
that
oh,
too.
I mean,
yeah.
It's only three chords, and it's like, it's not in my head that it's not.
Right, well,
which is super annoying.
It takes some working on it. I mean, it's a process. It takes a while. But also, I didn't just choose that progression randomly. That's 2-5-1. So most tunes, if you look for, I forget if we did it all together or if I just ended up talking to a couple of you about it, but There Will Never Be Another You, that song is almost entirely 2-5-1 progressions. So you're able to hear stuff over C minor 7, F7, B flat major 7. If you're able to hear that as a unit and arpeggiate those smoothly, then any 2-5-1, you can kind of use the same general ideas that you would have. And, that's where transposing little fragments comes in handy. Is you can say, okay, well, I'm going to say I'm taking, C minor 7, F7. That's just a little arpeggio pattern. I'm playing it clearly. So if we're doing There Will Never Be Another You, I want to be able to hear that. I really like that one, which I used to. Now I don't as much, but that's okay. It's vocabulary. It's good. So over There Will Never Be Another You, to be able to say, okay. And then here comes 2-5 in the key of C minor. Okay, I just used it there. And then there's another 2-5 going to the key of A flat major. So.
Sometimes ask me if you think in Polish and translate into English, there's no time to do that. Imagine that I was just doing that right now.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
That's a really good way of thinking about it. Yeah.
There's no way. I mean, you have to acquire that, you have to switch to that other language.
Yeah, you're hearing vocabulary that you've worked on or are, kind of in the process of getting used to over whatever that chord changes. And that's where that common tone stuff really comes in, because you're not thinking, oh, I need to slide down a half step because this is the fourth and it's going to become a fourth over a dominant chord and that doesn't sound good. You're thinking, it doesn't sound right, I'm going to slide it down. Have I done the common tone stuff with you guys, actually? I think you guys joined the group a little later, so we might not have.
I don't think I've done it with you, but I've worked on it with
Todd. Yeah, okay. Have you done any of that with your groups? The idea is you pick a note in, let's take that same chord progression and, say I'm starting on C in C minor. You kind of sing that note in your head and try to figure out if it's going to work over the next chord. In this case, it does. Start in different places. Start on B flat, for example. If I play this, it doesn't sound right. Where does it want to go? Okay. So the idea is when you're improvising, you're hearing how those little things need to change in your lines to kind of fit with the next chord, to outline the next chord really clearly. So doing that, along with, whatever other patterns you tend to work on, and they're going to be different depending on who you're interested in, who you're taking lessons with, who might have certain patterns that are important. I tend to try to be pretty open-minded about that. It's like, well, it's whatever, as long as it's clear harmonically what you're doing, it's really ear training to the point where you can hear those chords changing. Just like I think you can on a blues. You can kind of, at this point, for almost all of you, it's instinct that D natural needs to become a D flat when you hit the four chord. But for a while, it, playing D Naturals and it doesn't quite sound right, I don't know what's going on. So eventually you'll, you know, through doing some of these patterns, your ear just kind of gets used to what you have to do. And it just becomes part of your inner hearing, which is what you're kind of going for. I mean, that's what's fun about it. The fun part is definitely not doing all the math and trying to figure out what notes can I possibly play on this chord. It just doesn't, I don't know, it isn't as much fun at that point. Does that kind of answer your question?
Yeah, I think it helps. I mean,
it's a...
Well, are you always thinking arpeggios when you're doing this, too? I don't know if that...
Well,
that would be
both,
like.
But the arpeggios being kind of the pillars of what's going on.
Right.
You know, that when you're soloing, your first kind of objective is to outline the harmony really clearly. At least at first. Because you could just say, all right, I'll just play blues scale over this whole thing. But that tends to, if you're just thinking about that, it tends to lack a little bit of direction. Because you're not highlighting those things that are, you know, when you're comping, you're kind of sliding around trying to figure out what the little changes are, the hinges, as I like to call them. Like, the B natural going to the B flat. It's like, okay, there's something there, and if you outline that as a soloist, then everybody knows where you are. Creates movement. So as a starting point to hear those things, absolutely, arpeggiating every chord is a great way to go. But it's more that you're, you know, and the scales kind of fill in the gaps between those arpeggios. But, you know, a picture's worth a thousand words. Listen to what your favorite soloists do. I think the clearest way to get an idea of that is to pick a simple favorite solo and try singing along, and, you know, eventually sit down at your instrument and be a little bit analytical about it, saying, all right, you know, what if it looks like a scale, what scale is it? If it looks like an arpeggio chord, try to figure out how they're getting from one place to another, and then you'll start to hear it. I mean, yeah, I think we tend to kind of start with the mathematical part, but then this next step is the real slow kind of, a little bit more personal part where you try to figure out how to make yourself hear things, which is kind of a crazy idea in and of itself. How am I possibly going to do that? But it's, you know, it's all ear training, the same way that everybody comes to learn how to hear major scales differently. To work on it technically, you have to sing through it, you have to learn what your intervals are. You know, sometimes just learning what the difference between a minor second and a major second is takes a while. Though I guess for guitar and bass, you have to learn those pretty quickly because otherwise you're going to get messed up. But yeah, I mean, getting past that hurdle is, it's a very... It's an important step, though, because then you're starting to actually kind of rely on your instincts in terms of what the chords are, as opposed to thinking about them, which you don't usually have time to do. So, yeah, just taking little chord progressions and doing those different things over them. So if I was practicing Nardis, for example, I'd probably just take those first two bars, because it's kind of unusual, E minor 7 to F major 7. You know, just hear all the different ways you can do that, and then you'll start to get comfortable with those types of things.
Ah, okay, all right. So that's a good place to play them a lot.
Yeah, I mean,
so don't do the whole thing. Just pick two chords and just.
Well,
stick to
usually
that.
There are a couple of spots that tend to mess you up more than others, or certain spots where your ear starts to get unhinged. It's like, wait, where am I? What notes am I playing? So those are the spots that, for me, just singing some of those common tone things. Singing through, like putting on a backtrack, like iReal Pro, and just trying to pick a note and see if it can move up or down for the next chord, because that'll give you every possibility, and it'll force your ear to kind of adapt. So if you're trying that one, so maybe you start here, and you figure out that, oh, can that figure out which notes can stay, which ones need to go somewhere. It's a whole different experience kind of improvising over that section of tune, and that particular progression happens a lot, even transposed to other keys, you know. Eventually in that tune, you end up with B7 going to C. Same motion up a half step. So some of those same resolutions that you work out will apply. So it's really about kind of tiering patterns in that sense. Speaking of which, shall we play Three Harvests?
I just talked a ton, but it was really good stuff. I have the sense
that we're all kind of on the same page.
No, I'm glad it didn't totally derail me.
No, that's perfect. It's hard to, I mean, that's the kind of thing I would work on more in a private lesson setting than this, but, you know, everybody has the